calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, the assault is underway. I'm telling you, the assault on American democracy, it is absolutely underway. It's been going on, of course, for 5 years, but they have stepped up the tempo tremendously. The whole idea of a nation, of a constitutionally limited Republican democracy. Democracy in a republic, in a nation of laws, under attack by the right wing. They're out there saying, oh, this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that the president said that the NSA could spy on America. It doesn't matter. And this guy's only trying to sell a book. That's what's in the New York Times. I'm telling you, this is serious, serious stuff. And well, let me just share with you some comments from the president of the United States. This, now, I'll just give you a caveat here. This falls into the category of trick questions. So, you know, just forewarned. The president's being interviewed. The interviewer says, so, now this is an actual interview. So what, in a sense, you are saying is that there are certain situations where the president can decide that it's in the best interest of the nation or something and do something illegal. The president answers, well, when the president does that, it means it's not illegal. Interviewer, by definition, president. Exactly, exactly. If the president, for example, approves something because of the national security, or in this case because of a threat to internal peace and order of significant magnitude, then the president's decision in that instance is one that enables those who carry it out to carry it out without violating a law. So the president goes on to say, as far as the CIA's covert operations are concerned, as far as the FBI's covert operations are concerned, through the years they've been disclosed on a very limited basis to trusted members of Congress. In other words, we're doing the secret stuff. Congress knows about it. You shouldn't consider this a crime. The president goes on to say, well, what I had in mind, I think, was perhaps much better stated by Lincoln during the war between the states. Lincoln said, and I think I can remember the quote almost exactly, he said, actions which otherwise would be unconstitutional could become lawful if undertaken for the purpose of preserving the Constitution and the nation. Now, that's the kind of action I'm referring to. Of course, in Lincoln's case, it was the survival of the Union in wartime. It's the defense of the nation. And who knows, perhaps the survival of the nation now. The president went on to say, as far as a president is concerned, in a wartime, a president does have extraordinary powers, which would make acts that would otherwise be unlawful, lawful if undertaken for the purpose of preserving the nation and the Constitution, which is essential for the rights we're all talking about. Now, does that sound familiar to you? Does it sound sort of like parts of the press conference this morning or the speech yesterday? It was actually aired on television nationwide on May 19th. 1977. The interviewer was David Frost. The president was Richard Nixon. As a consequence of what Nixon was doing, a decision, the United States versus Nixon, went before the United States Supreme Court, in which Justice Berger, the case was decided 8-0. Why? Rehnquist did not participate. Chief Justice Berger, who, by the way, was appointed by Nixon, delivered the opinion of the court. Now, this was a case where the Watergate investigators were trying to get records. They wanted conversations between the president and his advisors. Does that sound familiar? And the president was saying, no, you can't have them. Because I have to be able to talk to my counselors, my advisors, and know that our conversations will be in private. Even though I'm the employee of the people, even though it's we the people, even though I'm the executive branch of government, even though I'm working for I have to be able to do this stuff in secret so that I can be president. Chief Justice Berger. key excerpts from the opinion. We turn to the claim that the subpoena should be quashed because it demands, quote, confidential conversations between the president and his close advisors that it would be inconsistent with the public interest to produce, end quote, from the subpoena. The first contention is a broad claim. Now, I'm reading from the Supreme Court decision in which the Supreme Court ruled 8-0 against Richard Nixon. The first contention is a broad claim that the separation of powers doctrine precludes judicial review of a president's claim of privilege. In other words, he says, you know, Nixon is saying that because of the separation of powers, the judicial branch has no right to oversee what he's doing. Back to the decision of the court. The second contention, reading from Justice Berger's opinion, is that if he does not prevail on the claim of absolute privilege, the court should hold as a matter of constitutional law that the privilege prevails over the subpoena. Berger goes on to say, many decisions of this court have unequivocally reaffirmed the holding of Marbury versus Madison. That was the case in 1803, when Chief Justice John Marshall, the cousin of Thomas Jefferson, the old Federalist, who was put on the court by John Adams as he was heading out of town in 1800, after Jefferson won the election, he puts Jefferson's cousin and political enemy as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And Marshall continued to sit in that position, as I recall, for 24 years. I could be wrong, but it's some incredibly long period of time. In any case, in 1803, this case, Marbury versus Madison, came before the court, and that was when Chief Justice Marshall said that the Supreme Court has the right, indeed the duty, to decide whether a law passed by Congress is constitutional. Okay? Just so you know. So now we're back to Chief Justice Berger, U.S. versus Nixon. Many decisions of this court, however, have unequivocally reaffirmed the holding of Marbury versus Madison that, quote, it is emphatically the province and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is, end quote. In other words, we, the court, we get to say what the law is, not you, the president. You get to be president. We have, you know, the Constitution clearly defines what you can do. You're commander-in-chief of the army. You have the bully pulpit. You can speak out. All these things you can. But you're not the guy who says what the law is. We are. By the way, welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you, 13 minutes past the hour. Many decisions of this court, as he says, have unequivocally reaffirmed this. It must follow that the court has the authority to interpret claims with respect to powers alleged to derive from enumerated powers. Berger goes through this thing. He says, we conclude that when the ground for asserting privilege as to subpoenaed material sought for use in a criminal trial is based only on the generalized interest in confidentiality, it cannot prevail over the fundamental demands of due process of law and the fair administration of criminal justice. The generalized assertion of privilege must yield to the demonstrated specific need for evidence in a pending criminal trial. He rules against Nixon. So the information comes out about what Nixon was doing when he told David Frost on May 19th. Well, that was kind of after the fact, but when he told David Frost, well, you know, it's if I say it, it's legal, right? And as a result, resolved, this introduced on Saturday, July 27th. Excuse me, the 24th. It was first. It was July 24th, 74. The Supreme Court ruled that Nixon had to surrender his tapes. On Saturday, July 27th, the House Judiciary Committee approved its first article of impeachment against Richard Nixon. Six of the committee's 17 Republicans joined all 21 Democrats in voting for the article. The following Monday, the committee approved its second article charging Nixon with abuse of power. The next day, the third and final article, contempt of Congress, was approved. Articles of impeachment resolved that Richard M. Nixon, President of the United States, is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, and that the following articles of impeachment to be exhibited to the Senate. Number one, obstruction of justice, making or causing to be made false or misleading statements to lawfully authorized investigative officers and employees of the United States of America. Oh, yeah. Yeah, covering up things.
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now,
This is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Article 1, Part 2 of the impeachment of Richard Nixon. Withholding relevant and material evidence or information from lawfully authorized investigative officers and employees of the United States. Article 3, approving, condoning, acquiescing in, and counseling witnesses with respect to the giving of false or misleading statements to lawfully authorized investigative officers and employees of the United States, and false or misleading testimony in duly installed judicial and congressional proceedings. Number 6, endeavoring to misuse the Central Intelligence Agency, an agency of the United States. It's 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Harbin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch.
Ah, Mr. Grinch, yes, indeed.
You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
Uh-oh. Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where smart people get their news. Richard Nixon, excuse me, George W. Bush, at his press conference this morning.
There's a process that goes on inside the Justice Department, and I presume about leaks. I presume that process is moving forward.
Now, in other words, let's not talk about the fact that I may have broken the law and violated the Constitution. Let's instead talk about how shameful it is that somebody would leak something. It's shameful. It's shameful. Somebody has a government secret, and they leaked it, and that is shameful. Unless it's a political enemy of mine.
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration. And there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Oh, excuse me. That clip was not from the conference. That was speaking about leaking another piece of secret information that involved bringing down an entire covert CIA counterterrorism operation. A worldwide CIA called Brewster Jennings, this front company, bringing the whole thing down. No, excuse me. No, back to the press conference. Yes, here we go.
My personal opinion is, it was a shameful act for someone to disclose this very important program in time of war. The fact that we're discussing this program is helping the enemy.
Yeah, this is just what Nixon said. You know, it's like, you know, these guys they're helping the North Vietnamese. You know, you got to understand we can't have this information coming out about these things. You know, it's wiretaps and all this stuff. Can't have it.
You got to understand, and I hope the American people understand, there's still an enemy that would like to strike the United States of America, and they're very dangerous.
Yeah, and that enemy was never called Iraq until you decided to stick your foot in there, Mr. Bush. But
it is a shameful act.
Yeah, it's shameful.
By somebody who has got secrets of the United States government and feels like they need to disclose them publicly.
Now, why? Now, here's the interesting thing. Condi Rice was asked, you know, Mrs. Rice, by Tim Russert over the weekend, how is it that the president can have the power to order wiretaps on American citizens without the oversight of a court? Now, keep in mind, the FISA courts, I have been saying for years, I don't think the FISA courts themselves are constitutional, but at least they're a court. Because in many cases, they authorize wiretaps retroactively. Anyhow, Condi Rice was asked by Tim Russert, you know, what is the law under which these things are possible? Condi Rice did not have an answer. Her answer was, I'm not a lawyer. And you want to say, wait a minute, I'm not a lawyer? Isn't she the one who was supposed to be advising him on this stuff? Here's the question, Tim Rosser, what Democrats and Republicans in Congress are asking, what is the authority that you keep citing? What law, what statute? Where in the Constitution does it say that the president can eavesdrop or wiretap citizens without a court order? Now, by the way, before we continue, let me simply read to you the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. It's one sentence long. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly, as in specifically, describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. In other words, the judiciary branch oversees this action of. So anyhow, Tim Russert says to Condi Rice, you know, what law, what statute, where in the Constitution does it say that the president can eavesdrop, wiretap American citizens? She says, he has authorities that derive from his role as commander-in-chief and his need to protect the country. He has acted within his constitutional authority, within statutory authority. Now, I am not a lawyer, and I'm quite certain that the Attorney General will address a lot of these questions. She was the national security advisor when he made this national security decision. And when she's asked, what's the law that authorizes this? She says, well, I'm not a lawyer. And Bush, when he's asked, what is the law that authorizes this? He says,
do I have the legal authority to do this? And the answer is absolutely. As I mentioned in my remarks, the legal authority is derived from the Constitution.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
As well as the authorization of force by the United States Congress.
We're going to have to go back now. With a very, very small microscope to find the fine print that Bush must have found in the law authorizing him to use force against Iraq if the United Nations found that there were weapons of mass destruction there. Where in that law, in that act passed by Congress, it says that he has the right to go around the Constitution. I couldn't find it. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
People speak of love, don't know what that means. Wait around for the one who fits just like a glove. Speak in terms of belief and belonging. Try to fit something in belonging.
And welcome back, my friends. Jackson Brown, amazing. 34 minutes past the hour, coming up on 25 before. Tom Hartman radio program for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. The executive branch of the United States, covered by and large by, as I recall, what is it, Article 2 of the Constitution? Yeah, the executive branch. The executive branch shall be vested in the President of the United States, shall hold office for 4 years, blah, blah, blah. He shall appoint in such manner as the legislature. It goes on through all this stuff. He's the commander-in-chief of the Army and the Navy. President shall have power to fill up vacancies that happen during recess, the power by the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties. He shall from time to time give to Congress information on the State of the Union, Section 3. Section 4, the President, Vice President, all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Those four sections, which make up I'd say probably a page and a half printed out, in 12-point Times Roman. I'm looking at a little tiny book here, little pocketbook, the U.S. Constitution. Can't be more than 150 words, 200 words. Make up the entire constitutional definition of the president's powers and responsibilities. Nowhere does it say that he has the right to ignore the Bill of Rights or other parts of the Constitution. The Bill of Rights, by the way. Congress, number one, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Unless they happen to have no blood for oil bumper stickers on their cars, in which case they go to the free speech zone at gunpoint. Oh, excuse me. I added that part just, you know. It's in the air. It's the zeitgeist. It's just the times. So I shared with you some clips from Article 1 of the impeachment of Richard Nixon. Article 2 of the impeachment of Richard Nixon defined abusive powers. He misused the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Secret Service, and other executive personnel in violation or disregard of the constitutional rights of citizens by directing or authorizing such agencies or personnel to conduct or continue electronic surveillance. And he did direct the concealment of certain records made by the Federal Bureau of Investigations of electronic surveillance. I'm parsing here. I'm giving you bits and pieces. The whole document is rather long. And a lot of it has to do with specific things that have to do with Dr. Lewis Fielding and stuff like that. Richard Kleindienst. Anyhow, he has, this is Article, Section 3, Article 2, of the Articles of Impeachment against Richard Nixon. He has, acting personally and through his subordinates and agents in violation or disregard of the constitutional rights of citizens, authorized and permitted to be maintained a secret investigative unit within the office of the president, unlawfully utilized the resources of the Central Intelligence Agency, engaged in covert and unlawful activities, and attempted to prejudice the constitutional right of an accused to a fair trial. Ever heard of Jose Padilla? Article 3, contempt of Congress. In his conduct of the office of President of the United States, Richard M. Nixon, contrary to his oath, faithfully to execute the office of the President of the United States, and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, had failed without lawful cause or excuse to produce papers and things as directed, you know, and they go through all the list. And they go on to say, in refusing to produce these papers and things, Richard M. Nixon substituting his judgment as to what materials were necessary for the inquiry interposed the powers of the presidency against the lawful subpoenas of the House of Representatives, thereby assuming to himself functions and judgments necessary to the exercise of the sole power of impeachment vested by the Constitution in the House of Representatives. In all this, Richard M. Nixon has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and subversive of constitutional government, to the great prejudice of the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, Richard M. Nixon, by such conduct, warrants impeachment and trial and removal from office. End of Articles of Impeachment. And, you know, Nixon knew he was going to lose, and so he stepped down. And here, Nixon, yeah, I can do it because I said so. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. And then in today's press conference, he continues.
Quick to detect and prevent. We use FISA still. You're referring to the FISA court in your question. Of course we use FISA. But Pfizer's is for long-term monitoring. What is needed in order to protect the American people is the ability to move quickly to detect.
Now, hang on just a second. FISA is there for long-term monitoring? FISA is the Foreign Investigation Security Act. I don't have it in front of me. Anyhow, it's the Foreign Investigations. It's about foreign investigations. Okay. The FISA Act. And it has nothing to do with long-term investigations. In fact, there have been thousands of warrants. It's about is creating a court that can quickly respond, and in many cases actually retroactively respond. This is one of the reasons why many of us have been saying for many years that FISA itself is unconstitutional, because they allow the NSA and other agencies to go ahead and do investigations. Thank you. It's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Thank you, Alex. They allow these agencies to go ahead and do these investigations and then approve of them retroactively. But anyhow, Bush continues with his little rant here.
Having suggested this idea, I then obviously went to the question, is it legal to do so? I swore to uphold the laws. Do I have the legal authority to do this? And the answer is absolutely. As I mentioned in my remarks, the legal authority is derived from the Constitution.
That one,
as well as the authorization of force by the United States Congress.
Amazing. And then Cheney comes along. This is from tonight's Nightline. It's the kind of capability that if we'd had before 9/11 might have led us to be able to prevent 9/11. We've had two 9/11 attacks and say, if we'd had this capability, we might have been able to stop it. Sorry, wrong. This is from Think Progress. The secret surveillance program authorized by President Bush did not provide the National Security Agency with any new capability at all. The NSA has always had this capability to listen to your or my telephone calls or to read our email. They've always had this capability. It's just that they have to go to a court to get authorization. It's got nothing to do with capability. And here, Vice President Cheney, it's the kind of capability that if we'd had before 9/11 might have led us to prevent 9/11. Sorry. In fact, from 1979 to 2002, 15,264 surveillance warrants were issued under the FISA court authorizing exactly this kind of investigation, but at least it was observed by a court. Somebody looked this thing over. Not one single warrant application was rejected. Not one. It's like Cheney just, everything has got to, it's got to lead back to 9/11. It's always got to lead back to 9/11. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. David in San Francisco, California on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, have a happy holiday. Hey,
I wanted to
talk about the word coup and whether or not we could define it to clearly determine what Bush is really up to, whether or not it's truly a coup. But I happen to think before that, you're a real good person to ask. This whole happy Christmas versus happy holidays thing,
yeah.
What do you bet that this
is? It's a war on Hanukkah is what it is, David. No, I'm not kidding. And it's not just Hanukkah. There's also a Hindu holiday around the wintertime, which I don't know the name of. There's a Muslim holiday around the center of wintertime. There's others. Hanukkah and Kwanzaa actually are the two major ones that are celebrated in the United States in addition to Christmas. And by ordering people to say Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays, it's a war on Kwanzaa and Hanukkah. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. But I'm wondering also if it isn't a war on Kmart. In other words, that Kmart has got a share price, and they're looking forward to having a good business year. And all of a sudden, somebody comes along and orders a boycott. A religious neocon. So what do you?
Well, it would be interesting to find out if these guys just bought a whole bunch of Kmart puts. If they're
exactly.
selling the stock short. We've only got about 40 seconds left, though, David. You wanted to mention something about Bush.
Kind of playing with the word a coup.
I'd say a coup has already happened.
Well, yeah, but in other words, if Bush is existing as the president, can he do a coup on himself? And so is what the coup is of the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
And so
a coup is broadly by definition the illegal seizure of a state.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that happened in 2000, frankly.
Yeah, well, I'm just how the newspapers and the wire ticker usually has how do you pronounce a given thing. So what's the better term to use in the state of art, so to speak?
There you go. I'm not sure, but you raise a good question, David, and I appreciate it. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a warm tonight and the moon fills the time. When the stars take their ride, she'll be leaving where she goes.
I don't know.
Welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least a president who will conform his behavior to the constitutional limits defined, therefore. Welcome back to our program. Thanks to the folks in the chat room for pointing me to the congressional resolution on Iraq. I'm going to rant about this in the next hour. I got to tell you, because we've just been looking at the Constitution. Bush says he has two pieces of law. Condi Rice, who was advising him, was asked by Tim Russert this weekend, well, what law gives Bush the right to spy on Americans, to have, you know, a part of the executive branch, the NSA, spy on Americans without a warrant, without a court saying that it's okay, even if it's a FISA court, which gave warrants to, you know, over 15,000 warrants since the late 90s, with, you know, never once saying no. Never once during that period of time. From 1979 to 2002, 15,264 surveillance warrants. Not one single warrant application rejected. What, Mr. President, gives you the authority? And he says the Constitution and the congressional resolution on Iraq. And I'm going to tell you, the congressional I'm sitting here reading this thing, the congressional resolution on Iraq, it's not in there either. And I'm going to tell you, it sure as heck is not in the Constitution. It just absolutely is not in the Constitution. Jesse in San Diego, California. Hey, Jesse, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, thanks a lot for bringing some intellectual integrity back to the airwaves in the United States.
Thank you for your kind words.
First of all, if the Democrats have any huevos, that's a colloquialism down here in Southern California.
They have any what?
Huevoses.
Huevoses. Oh, huevoses. Yeah, it's Spanish for, yeah, okay, got it.
If then the two senators from New York, California, and Reed need to stand up with the Wilson family and say, bring it on.
Yeah, I agree.
Secondly, your buddy Nick, or Nixon, not your buddy, he knew in 55. He knew in 1955 that Ho Chi Minh, if they had an election, would win by 80%.
Oh, yeah.
But that dragged on another 20 years.
Yeah.
Thirdly, keep
in mind, our involvement in Vietnam began when Nixon was vice president.
Exactly. And thirdly, I'd like to debate you on the issue of the constitutionality of the Warren Commission, because I firmly believe that was unconstitutional.
Well, that's interesting. I it's a debate you may well win, Jesse, because the constitutionality of it or unconstitutionality of it is something I've frankly never considered. I don't know that it would be unconstitutional. I'm not sure that it's even a constitutional question whether you can have an investigatory commission.
The issue I'm seeing in my research is that the members of the commission weren't adequately screened as. I know they weren't jurors,
well,
but
here's the thing, Jesse. You got to understand the Warren Commission was put together specifically to make sure that the American people didn't think that Castro had anything to do with the assassination of Kennedy, so that the American people wouldn't call for a response against Castro, which Jack Kennedy, or this is going back to a policy that Kennedy had put into place. Kennedy was obviously dead at that point, which LBJ believed would cause World War III, would bring about a Soviet response. But that's a discussion for another time and another day, Jesse, if that's all right with you. I'm pleased to talk to you about the Kennedy assassination, that stuff. In fact, we've got a book about it right now called Ultimate Sacrifice, and I recommend you check it out. And I don't mean that like trying to plug the book, but it gets into
that.
Okay,
well, I'd like to plug mine. It's called Friendly Fire on Holy Grounds, but it goes over an investigation that Kennedy ordered in 62, and there was $3 billion missing all the way up until 1972, and then
great.
Nixon blew it off.
Okay, you done it, Jesse, and thanks
Thank
a lot
you,
for the
man.
Call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Thank Kenny in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Kenny, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just want to say this thing with this eavesdropping stuff that they got going on these. It's dangerous. I'm thinking that it probably even go as far as they might be investigating just members of Congress trying to figure out what kind of dirt they can get up on that.
Yeah, they may well be investigating everybody, Kenny. I mean, that's the whole reason why you have a court overlooking things, to say, you know, is this right or is this wrong? And, your point well made. Kenny, thank you very much. Rick in Lawton, Oklahoma. Hey, Rick, what's up?
How's it going?
Good.
Merry Christmas. And I mean Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays.
Okay, you must not be Jewish.
Doesn't matter if I'm Jewish. I'm just saying Merry Christmas.
Okay, well, thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too.
The caller passed. His facts are wrong. Ho Chi Minh actually approached President Truman in the 50s to get us as an ally to help him support independence of both countries. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
That was before Dien Bien Phu.
Yeah.
But what I got a problem with, and I'm not trying to be tantric or anything to that effect.
No, I'm just asking to be brief because we only have about a minute left.
Oh, gotcha. Howard Dean has no answers. He just says President Bush is doing everything wrong. There's no specifics.
Actually, Rick, if you go to the DNC website and particularly some of the groups that are associated with the Democrats or some of the Democratic politicians, because the Democratic Party is not taking a position on the war, unfortunately, I agree with you in that regard, that I think the party should be, but they're not, because there's a disagreement within the party. But you'll find that a lot of people have a lot of answers on this thing. And Howard Dean's answer is basically do what Jack Murtha is suggesting. And Jack Murtha has a very clear answer, and that is get the bullseye off the back of our soldiers and tell the Iraqis, you guys are going to have to run your own country. Sorry.
Because I'm right here near Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where a lot of field artillerymen have gone to Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we feel no support from the Democrats at all.
Yeah, well, that's tragic, because there's a lot of Democrats out there who are really working for you, Rick, and
you need to refine their message.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well said. Rick, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. See, I thought he was going to pick a fight with me. There you go. It said disagree. People who are going to pick a fight with me go to the front of the line if you call in. So, but you can't sneak in that way. Oh, my goodness. We'll continue this conversation in the next hour of the program. I want to get into this congressional resolution on Iraq passed by the House and Senate October 2002, whereas a joint resolution authorized the use of U.S. armed forces. It's 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. It goes on and on and on. The congressional resolution on Iraq passed by the House and the Senate October 2002. Joint resolution authorized the use of United States Armed Forces against Iraq. By the way, welcome to the program. Welcome back to our program, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Whereas Iraq, in direct and flagrant violation of the ceasefire, attempted to thwart the efforts of weapons inspectors to identify and destroy Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. It's like a bill of particulars. Not unlike the Declaration of Independence. You know, King George did this, King George did that, King George did the other thing. Whereas Iraq poses both a continuing threat to the national security of the United States, international peace and security in the Persian Gulf region, and remains immaterial and an unacceptable breach of its international obligations by, among other things, continuing to possess and develop a significant chemical and biological weapons capability, actively seeking a nuclear weapons capability, and supporting and harboring terrorist organizations. This is the law that Congress passed, right? The resolution, actually. Authorization, it goes through this whole, it's like four pages of the whereas the president has authority under the Constitution to take or action in order to deter and prevent acts of international terrorism against the United States, as Congress recognized in the Joint Resolution on Authorization of Military Force, and whereas it is the national security, blah, 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 they're resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives, short title, Section 1. This joint resolution may be cited as the authorization for the use of military force in Iraq. The Congress of the United States supports the efforts of the presidents to strictly enforce through the United Nations Security Council all relevant Security Council resolutions applicable to Iraq or applicable, and encourages him in those efforts, and to obtain prompt and decisive action by the Security Council to ensure that Iraq abandons its strategy of delay, evasion, and noncompliance and promptly and strictly complies with all relevant Security Council resolutions. Okay. Section 3, authorization for use of United States Armed Forces. Authorization, the president is authorized to use the armed forces of the United States as he determines to be necessary and appropriate in order to defend the national security of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq and enforce all relevant United Nations Security Council resolutions regarding Iraq. Now, is there a sentence in there that I missed that says, and spy on the American people without a court order? And ignore the Constitution? Presidential determination. Maybe this is it. Section 3, paragraph B. In connection with the exercise of the authority granted in subsection A to use force, the president shall, prior to such exercise or as soon as thereafter may be feasible, but no later than 48 hours after exercising such authority, make available to the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the pro tempore of the Senate his determination that, one, in other words, the president has to prove to Congress these things, these two things, if he's going to use force in Iraq. This passed in October 2002, just in time for the November elections. This was the Republican October surprise of 2002. The president, if he's going to use the power that was granted him in the previous paragraph that I just read to you, must do two things. One, he must represent to the Speaker of the House and the head of the Senate that, one, reliance by the United States on further diplomatic or other peaceful means alone will not adequately protect the national security of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq, or is not likely to lead to enforcement of all relevant United Nations Security Council resolutions regarding Iraq. Well, he never hit that one because, you know, Hans Blix was still there. He said, just give me a couple weeks and we'll wrap this thing up. The entire Security Council was going, you know, we're still going on this thing. Every other country in the world except for the United Kingdom, by and large, was saying, you know, let's give it some more time here. Even a lot of voices in the UK. Okay, so it wasn't that. Two, acting pursuant to this resolution, this must be it. This must be the one where it says that he has the power to contravene the, you know, to invade another country and set aside the Constitution. Two, acting pursuant to this resolution is consistent with the United States and other countries continuing to take necessary actions against international terrorists and terrorist organizations, including those nations, organizations, or persons who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks that occurred on September 11, 2001. I don't think it had anything to do with that. Gee, I'm sorry, George, but I just can't find it. I mean, I don't think it's here.
But Pfizer's is for long-term monitoring. What is needed in order to protect the American people is the ability to move quickly to detect.
Yeah.
Now, having suggested this idea, I then obviously went to the question, is it legal to do so? I swore to uphold the laws. Do I have the legal authority to do this? And the answer is absolutely. As I mentioned in my remarks, the legal authority is derived from the Constitution, as well as the authorization of force by the United States Congress.
Well, let's see. I just read you this, the authorization of force. There's a few little pieces toward the tail end of it here. War Powers Resolution requirements, specific statutory authorization consistent with Section 8 of the War Powers Resolution. Congress declares that this section is intended to constitute specific statutory authorization within the meaning of the War Powers Resolution. Nothing in this resolution supersedes any requirement of the War Powers Resolution. The President shall, at least once every 60 days, submit to Congress a report on matters relevant to this joint resolution, including actions taken. I have not seen many of those reports. Have you? To the extent that the submission of any report described in subsection A coincides with the submission of any other report, all such reports may be submitted as a single consolidated report. Well, that's sweet. To the extent that the information included in such a report shall be considered as meeting the requirements of Section 3 of Public Law 102-1. That's it. That's it. I mean, there's no there. I'm sorry, George. That's the congressional resolution on Iraq. And as far as the Constitution goes, the Constitution is pretty specific about breaking into people's emails and listening into their telephone conversations. And that's, you know, broadly referred to as your house's papers and effects. Because the Constitution, of course, was written before we had, you know, email, but we certainly had, you know, postal mail, which included your papers. And the Supreme Court has ruled many, many times on this. Amendment 4. to the Constitution of the United States. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. Have you noticed, by the way, that he has also managed to... this is absolutely a masterful bit of obfuscation and misdirection by the Bush administration, by the way. I guess, tip my hat to them, I don't know, or express my horror to you, that they're no longer talking about the fact that, for example, the Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or other otherwise infamous crime except on presentment of indictment of a grand jury. In other words, nor shall any person be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In other words, you can't throw somebody in jail for years or even months without charging them with a crime, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by impartial jury of the state and district, blah, 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 and will have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation. The Seventh Amendment, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. The Eighth Amendment, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. I mean, you notice we're not talking about that anymore. Why? Well, because Jose Padilla is now going to be charged in an actual court with a whole bunch of different things from what Bush said he was going to be charged with originally. So let's see. Bush lied to Congress in getting us into this war, because if you read this resolution that was passed by the Senate, by the House and the Senate in October of 2002, it makes all kinds of charges about what a threat Iraq is to the United States. Those charges are based on information that was given to Congress by the White House, and that information was known by the White House to be false, much of it, or at least questionable, and the questionable part and the false part was never shared with members of Congress. We're not discussing that anymore, because George has said, well, I take responsibility. That was such a big admission that the media, the mainstream media, were all, oh, my goodness, look at that. And all the right-wingers are, oh, look at this, he's taking responsibility for this. Let's talk about something other than him lying to Congress. Because, you see, lying to Congress is an impeachable offense. It is clearly an impeachable offense. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So that's how it is. That's what we got. And if the president wants to admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo and look us in the eye. Call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, or Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains. It's done closed down along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. Dust devils dance in the noonday heat. There's rats in the alley and trash in the street. Gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here anymore.
Yeah, increasing. Unless you're a CEO, a multimillionaire, a multibillionaire, then you can make it really, really well. I mean, Bush is telling you how great the economy is. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here back with you. 1-866-440-THOM, 440-8466. Our telephone number, Jay in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, two things relevant to what we're talking about. One sort of side strange thing is that I have a document I'm working on that instead of saving it on a disk, I just cut and paste into Yahoo. And I went back to use it today, and all the curse words I had, including words like cockamamie, cocksure, whore, and hardcore, had all been changed to just number signs.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
My bigger question is, I saw a thing, a quote from Capitol Hill Blue that said, last month Bush said at some Republican thing that to find out if that's true.
Thanks. Yeah, Jay, just for our listeners, I just edited out your expletive. I don't do Howard Stern on this show, but you know, you're quoting Capitol Hill Blue, saying that Bush had said that the Constitution was just a GD piece of paper, shall we say. I think everybody knows what we're talking about. And I've seen that. I've read that. I've had a dozen people forward it to me. The reason that I haven't talked about it on the air is because I have seen no independent corroboration of it. And Capitol Hill Blue carries stuff that I'm really not sure of, frankly. It's stuff that I would like to believe, but I'm just not sure of. So
imagine if we can confirm that. That would be
that's the thing. I have asked a number of people, you know, good, credible people who would be in a position to know if there's any confirmation of that. Nobody has come forward and said yes. And so that's why, Jay, I haven't repeated the story and why I'm suspicious of it, frankly. I don't think Bush, you know, people think Bush is dumb. I don't think he's that dumb. I really don't. Although, I do think that reflects his true opinion. Jay, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Greg Gorman with the Talk Radio News Service with us. Hey, Greg, what's on your mind today?
Well, hi, Tom. You know, the president did a bait and switch today.
Another one.
Yeah, exactly. Another one in a long line, as did Congress early this morning. First, the president tried to turn it around and say, yes, I authorized wiretaps, but it's shameful on the people who actually leaked the story that I was doing it. So that was you know, he's trying to actually, you know, wag his finger at people and say, I did it, but I can't believe that you reported on it.
It's the exact same thing Nixon did.
Right.
It's the exact same thing Nixon did.
Yeah, right.
The question is, will this end up with the same result that happened to Nixon, or will Bush get away with it?
You know, that remains to be seen, of course. If you ask some Democrats on the Hill, including Senator Feingold, he said that the president has broken the law, he's making up his laws, you know, as he goes, and it could be impeachable. You know, we heard from Senator Spector, who also wants to have hearings and will have hearings in January, although he on the judiciary will be Biddy, because we have the Judge Alito hearing starting on January 9th. So
right.
He's going to be busy. We'll see how far hearings go on the president, if he broke the law or not. And the other
It'll be a wonderful brand new distraction, Alito.
Well, that's right.
And right now they're running all these ads. Alito's going to save Christmas, right?
Wow.
I am telling you, it is, you know, for a while I was, Alex Goldmark, our board op in New York, he was saying, you know, you ought to call it what was that, Alex, that you were saying?
I said we should call it Their War on Happy Holidays.
Their War on Happy Holidays. I am convinced, and maybe it's probably more appropriate for me to say this because I'm Christian, not Jewish, but I see it as a war against Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, and I'm going to start calling it that because I do think that there is a anti everybody else's holiday piece to this, and certainly a war against you know, anybody who doesn't celebrate anything. But,
I mean, Tom, what do you say? I say Happy Holidays.
Sure.
Just by practice. I lived in New York for 7 years. It's what you say to people because you're not sure if someone celebrates Christmas. It's
exactly.
It's a nice thing to say. And like I always say, there is more than one holiday at Christmas. You know, there's New Year's.
That's right.
And, you know, there's Hanukkah. And
that's
there's
right.
Thanksgiving. And there's the Feast of the Virgin Mary in Mexico. There's lots of holidays this
yeah.
time of year.
Well, and in
you
fact.
Get all that way, say happy holidays.
Yeah.
And
if somebody's like a really serious hardcore Catholic, I believe that this is actually happy Advent right now. It's not Christmas
See,
until
exactly.
after the 25th. I'm not Catholic, so I can't speak to that, but that's my understanding. But I thought it was interesting. I read a blog about a guy who was a waiter in New York, and he intentionally went out of his way to say Merry Christmas to people in the restaurant and just to see what would happen. What happened was that those people who were obviously going to be celebrating Christmas still looked at him shocked and, you know, after like a moment would say Merry Christmas back at him. And people who weren't celebrating Christmas, a few of them were quite offended. And, you know, but everybody sort of took it as I'm in your face. Like he was being an evangelical kind of thing, you know.
You know what? And that's really how people seem to take it sometimes is that it's not so much about, you know, whether you're Jewish or Christian or Muslim or Hindu or whatever, it seems so in your face to just assume that you know what someone celebrates at this time of year. And it just, it doesn't seem like that, you know, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me. I don't understand what this whole thing is about.
Yeah. Plus there's, if it was a single holiday, then Happy Holiday would even be fine. But, you know, it's a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy, you know, what are we going to do? Go through the list. Anyhow, Greg, thanks. Great to hear from you. The Talk Radio News Service. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yeah, we send you glad tidings from New York. Open up your eyes so you may see.
You tell him Van Morrison.
Ask you not to read between the lines. Hope that you will come right in on time.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour here on the place where we are moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America, or at least this little corner of democracy, this little corner of the United States of America, growing by the day, but still our comfortable little corner here. Now, the questions. Bush says that revealing this whole thing of his illegally spying on Americans is a shameful act, right? He says that this is a shameful act.
But it is a shameful act.
Yeah.
By somebody who has got secrets of the United States government and feels like they need to disclose them publicly.
Yeah, and so, he number one, he doesn't want us to know about it. He doesn't want the public to know about it. He won't go to court to ask for a warrant, even to a FISA court. A FISA court is a secret court set up inside the Justice Department where even the judge, you don't even know who the judges are. This is not a public court. This is a secret court that since 1979 has issued over 15,200 of these warrants and never once said no. The FISA court, the foreign, what was that again, Alex? Foreign Intelligence Security Act, right?
Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Surveillance Act, bless you. He will not go before the FISA court. Why would he not do that? Well, they say it's because we want quick stuff. We want to do this quick. Except the FISA court has, for years, since 1979, allowed administrations to go ahead with surveillance and then come back after the fact and say, this is what we did. Will you give us a retroactive warrant? The FISA court says yes. They have never said no. So why would he refuse to go to court? Why would he refuse to follow the law? Why would he refuse to tell more than just a very few members of Congress? And we're not even sure what he told them. And why would he say repeatedly that if the terrorists knew that we were doing this, they might be tipped off? Well, according to the guy, the John in D.C., blogging over at America Blog, americablog.blogspot.com, the only possible reason, in his mind, and it makes a lot of sense to me, for why Bush would do all this stuff is that he is spying on American journalists. American journalists, from time to time, have contact with terrorists. Look at Daniel Pearl went over to Pakistan to interview somebody who was associated with Al-Qaeda. It's their job. American journalists are, you know, sometimes in the United States, sometimes out of the United States, and the administration wouldn't want it known that they're spying on journalists. Because there's this thing called the First Amendment to the Constitution, which guarantees freedom of the press. And it would just be a little too Nixon-esque, wouldn't it? In fact, John points out, you know, maybe we've even outsourced the spying. Maybe we have other countries doing it for us. The question that nobody's asking, and I wish somebody would have asked the news conference this morning, why, or not why, Mr. Bush, is part of the spying that you're doing on Americans that you don't want to go through the courts, spying on American journalists? Or on American talk show hosts? I'll give you money on that one. Anyhow, 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. Ron in Davis, California on the line. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, you're a great teacher for all of us.
Well, thank you, I think.
Yeah, it's an absolute fact. You saved many people's day, I'm sure. I was in Southeast Asia 2 years before Gulf of Tonkin and the Peace Corps, and I saw what was coming. And I would say for about the last 10 years, I've been absolutely obsessed with the presidential war powers. And I'd like you to grab that little constitution you have in front of you and go to Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1.
Sure.
Please.
You want me to read it? The president should be commander?
Okay, yeah. Read it slowly because I got Lewis Fisher's book here on presidential war power.
Okay. It's only one long sentence.
That's right. Well, it stops with a semicolon.
Right, yeah, there's several semicolons in it.
Okay.
The president shall be commander-in-chief.
Right, now, hold on, shall. Focus on shall. I can continue.
Okay. Shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states, comma, when called into
when.
The actual... Right, when. There you go. See, yeah, you're right. There's a modifier. There's a caveat there.
Right.
When called into the actual service of the United States.
Okay,
now, I would
I'll
say...
read what Fisher says on that. The framers empowered the president to be commander-in-chief, but that title must be understood in the context of military responsibilities that Congress authorizes.
Yeah, I got to ask you, Ron, rather than reading from a book here, just, you know, tell me
well,
what
he's saying
say.
Is that the shall and when words are all important.
Yeah.
And if Bush, for example, if we are not at war and no war has been declared by Congress, because Congress can only declare war.
Right.
And the War Powers Resolution Act of 1973 has never been proven to be constitutional at all. And Bush claims it's constitutionally correct. It is not. It's just hanging out there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah, actually, I have the resolution right here. It doesn't say that. They go out of their way to say that they are consistent with the War Powers Act, but it also says that he has the authority to use force.
Well, I'll tell you what Lewis Fisher says on 147. He says briefly, I don't need to really quote it, but he says the War Powers was based on more than partisan motivations than on constitutional analysis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's never been it's never been part of the Constitution, the War Powers Act.
No, it's not. It's
so Bush, technically, if we're really stiff, and I don't think we're at war in Iraq anymore. I just think we're at occupation.
Oh, sure. Bush,
right.
I'm not even sure we ever had a war. We had an invasion.
Absolutely.
where we knocked over a ragtag, you know, remnant of an army that we had been bombing and starving into submission for 9 years.
Right, right. Tons of what we have done, Tom, in my opinion. We can leave the United Nations totally out of it and our coalition totally out of it. It is absolutely illegal in terms of our own laws.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, Ron, at all. And thank you. Thank you for pointing it out. That's fascinating. Good to hear from you. That's fascinating. Yes, you read the Constitution and you get, there's these subtleties in there. Now, I thought that the when was, you know, he could call up the National Guard when he needed to. But in any case, Brian in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Well, who's your secret Santa this year, Tom?
Who's my secret Santa?
The secret Santa.
What, you been watching Monk?
Huh?
Did you see that episode of Monk?
Oh, no, I just thought about it. Since everything is secret now, hope he doesn't leave a lump of strip mine coal in your stock.
Okay.
Anyway, I found it interesting, the logic that Bush used about the reason for eavesdropping and spying. We don't want them to know what we see them do to prevent them from what we don't know they're going to do. And this kind of reasoning.
Right.
It is very, you know, you just have to ignore it and go about your business on one level.
Right. I mean, well, really, here you have to ask the question. Does Bush really think we are so stupid that we would say, okay, we will suspend the Constitution because if, God forbid, the terrorists should find out that we're actually trying to snoop on them, they might do something different?
as if we don't want, you know.
See, this it falls into the argument of terrorists can't walk and chew gum at the same time. This is what we are being asked to believe. It's the same thing as when he said the reason that we're fighting them in Iraq is so we won't have to fight them here. Like,
right.
As if there's only three of them, and if we can keep them tied up there, they won't come here.
Well, right? It's that
or 30 of them or 3,000 or whatever, but, you know, that they're so stupid that they can't do two things at once.
Well,
and people go, yeah, it makes sense to me. And
yeah,
I'm like, what?
As I recall, when the unleashing of the military first began, it was like, if you're not with us, you're against us as well, and that's the real scary thing.
Yeah, and that's another.
And I like
another
to wash my hands of the whole thing, just try to, you know, go about my business. And unfortunately, now I'm thinking, well, what did I say? Who did I say that to? And what was my opinion then? And and I'm just, you know, well, that's water under the bridge as far as I'm concerned, but someone's keeping track and someone remembers, so it's just, you know, just something I'm just going to have to just watch my words and steps, I suppose.
Here's the important, you're right, Brian, and thank you for calling and making the point. Here's the important point. It's not Bush bad. That's not the point I'm trying to make here. I mean, yes, I think that George Bush has been a miserable failure as a president. In fact, if you Google miserable failure and click I'm feeling lucky, you'll get a surprise. But that's not the point. The point is that I love this country. I think that the idea of a Republican democracy, a democratic republic, a constitutionally limited representative democracy, republic, you know, a democracy in a republic, is a brilliant idea. It was one of the most brilliant ideas to come out of the Enlightenment. It is a thing, it is a sacred thing. And I'm offended by the fact that this guy, this president, is doing the same thing Richard Nixon did, in that he's saying he is above that. That it is not about democracy, it's not about the will of the people, it's not about the laws of a republic. That it's about whatever he decides has to be, whatever he wants, for whatever reason he wants it, simply because he decided it. And they ask Condi Rice, you know, well, you know, what law did you advise the president? Oh, I'm not a lawyer. That is what offends me. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. Working class hero is something to be.
And welcome back, my friends. Viagra for your brain. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Have a wonderful Christmas, you and yours.
Well, thank you. You too, if that's your appropriate holiday.
I haven't even wasted my breath about the whole subject. It is so ridiculous.
I know. On the one hand. On the other hand, Gary, I think it's really important that we acknowledge it for what it is, which is a demagogic attempt to divert our attention away from the real issues of the day
same playbook.
And kick up the ratings for Fox News.
The same playbook.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing as flag burning amendments and anti-gay marriage amendments. It is stuff to distract people.
And there's a reason for it in his mindset, and if you will, and this is what I called about.
Yeah, I appreciate the Merry Christmas, but I got to tell you, you know, we will be celebrating Hanukkah with some friends of ours as well. So I mean, you know, you can say Happy Holidays to me if you want.
Thumbs up, thumbs up.
I just don't have any close friends who are celebrating Kwanzaa right now.
Let you overreact to it, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. So anyhow, that's not what you called about, Gary.
No, I was glad to hear you say that, though. I think the president has become even more smug than I originally thought in his own power.
Yeah.
I think that's the bottom line with George Bush and some of his followers. It becomes more smug and in their own power.
That's the bottom line. That's frankly the danger of it. I agree, Gary.
And secondly, I'm lighting up a little bit. You know, this reminds me of when I saw him today in the press conference.
Mm-hmm.
reminding me of that old Billy Preston song, "Nothing from nothing means nothing."
There you go. Well said.
Nothing from nothing means nothing.
Yeah.
And I was grinding my teeth so much, my girlfriend said, she was worried I was going to go down to my gums.
Yeah. Well, Gary, relax. You know, have a good glass
right,
of wine
thanks,
and say l'chaim. And yeah, okay. Thanks a lot, Gary.
Thanks,
good talking
Tom.
To you. Appreciate it. Or say prosit or skol or whatever is appropriate. Sharon in Camino Island. Is that Camano Island?
Camano Island,
Washington. Hey, Sharon.
Hi. You know, on this Bush thing saying that he needs immediacy to wiretap and thus can't wait for a court order, I began wondering how in the heck long does it take to get a court order. Well, my husband's a homicide detective, and he gets them all the time, so I asked him, and he said he gets them in about 2 to 3 hours, but the president could probably get them faster. And he said the most time-consuming part is the investigation leading up to due cause for the warrant.
Yeah.
So there's the rub. Obviously, Bush wants to waive the requirement for due cause to get a wiretap and to just wiretap at his whim.
Well, a couple of points, Sharon. First of all, your husband, the homicide detective, does not have a special secret homicide court that
right,
would give him a warrant after he's already arrested somebody.
Right.
Bush has a secret FISA court.
Right, he can get it in a minute.
Well, he can get it. He can do the investigation today and get the warrant next week.
Yeah.
They will do it retroactive.
Yeah.
So, number one, he can do that. Number two, I don't think it's just about proving that, you know, the due cause, proving that that you're complying with the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution and that there is some reason for the warrant. In fact, there's some folks in the chat room right now talking about how, you know, Colleen Rowley was trying to get a FISA warrant and Moussaoui. And apparently, there's a checkered history with these things. But in any case, and I'm going to nail some of that detail down as we go on with this. But the point is that I don't think this is about Bush thinking that he's so imperious that he doesn't have to prove to a court why he's doing something. I think he's trying to hide something.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, both go to the same...
Right. And so the question then becomes, what's he trying to hide?
Right.
And it's like if your husband, the homicide detective, just started arresting people for homicide
right. Right.
And saying, well, it's because I decided
right.
I'm going to arrest him. You'd
well,
have to say, and then if over time you discovered that all of the guys that your husband arrested all happened to be, you know, people who were, yeah, or, you know, related to your mother, to his mother-in-law or something, members of a particular racial group. I mean, you know, pick your...
Right.
Then you'd say, something going on here. I'm telling you, Bush is hiding something, and it's not something he's hiding from the terrorists. There is not a terrorist in the world that doesn't know that we are doing absolutely everything we can to get them, and they've got a pretty good idea what we can do without us telling them that Bush doesn't need a warrant to do it.
For sure. And I think the one thing to remind Republicans about all the time is that if this is an authority of the president, it'll apply to a Democratic president, too.
Yeah,
when
there
we
you
get
go.
One.
There you go. And
you cannot give any president this power.
And that's why, Sharon, I think what concerns me with regard to the voting machines as well is that the Republicans are behaving
right.
as if they think they will have power forever.
Right.
And which means one of two things. Either they are being incredibly ignorant of history, or they're up to something that is beyond unspeakable.
Right. Or they truly will control the voting machines forever.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So they're
but
up to
I'm
something
thinking,
that's beyond unspeakable.
I guess we need to get Bill Gates on our side and have him hack into all these computers.
Well,
if we get a better computer.
They're using Windows operating systems,
well,
Sharon.
You
know. There you go. All right, Sharon, thanks a lot for the call.
Their own game.
There you go. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Amazing. See, I just had to tell you, this is not about, we can't let the terrorists know that we're investigating them. It's like, what? You think they're sitting around going, I don't have to worry about being a terrorist because Bush has got to go to a FISA court. I don't think so. No, there's something that he doesn't want to have to go before a court and say, this is what I'm doing, because that court may say no. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartmann.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartmann radio program, where we run rings around the right wing every day. George Bush yesterday, last night, claimed that a redeployment of U.S. forces out of Iraq would undermine their morale. He said, it's important for every American to understand the consequences of pulling out of Iraq before our work is done. We would undermine the morale of our troops by betraying the cause for which they've sacrificed. He said the same thing this morning in his press conference. He said, you wouldn't want a soldier, I'm paraphrasing now, you wouldn't want a soldier to be hearing somebody back here calling for us to pull out. But staying the course is not the way. I mean, the bottom line here, as is so eloquently stated on by Nico on the Think Progress blog, staying the course is not the way to improve morale of your soldiers. Do you want to improve the morale of your soldiers? Tell them what the mission is. Tell them how they'll know when it's finished. Tell them what you're going to be doing. Say, you know, our goal is to take Omaha Beach and to drive the Nazis back to Berlin and topple Adolf Hitler, and that's it. And then you're all done. Jack Murtha the other day was talking about how we've got the Army engaged in nation building, and that's not the job the Army should do. And he's absolutely right. And what's so ironic about this, what's so incredibly ironic about this, is that during the presidential debates in 2000, George W. Bush, in answer to a question from, you know, one of the, I forget who it was, you know, in the debate asking the question. But in any case, George W. Bush went into this thing about he does not think it's a good idea to engage in nation building. I would not engage in nation building. Ain't going to do it. So what are we doing? We're building a nation. We're building a nation. And this is where it gets really weird. Because Bush doesn't, first of all, he doesn't believe in nation building, and so now he's doing it. But that means that he wouldn't know how to go about doing it. See, nation building is a really tricky thing. It's very rarely successfully done, frankly. Nations, by and large, have to build themselves. I mean, we have taken hundreds of billions of dollars in the United States. Hundreds of billions of dollars. And you know, devoted that to the effort in Iraq to rebuild that nation. If instead of saying, okay, we're going to take $227,601,232,512, well, now it's up to $247,416. Now it's up to $250. Anyway, if we said we're going to take $227 billion, and by the way, Iraqis, here's the cash. You just have $200 billion. Do your best with it. I mean, keep in mind, I mean, our foreign aid bill that everybody gets all up, our foreign aid, the money that we're passing out that everybody gets all upset about, is like, you know, I mean, our biggest allies, Israel and Egypt, for example, I believe are getting the largest chunks of our foreign aid. Neither one of them is even getting $10 billion a year. If we said to Iraq, here's $200 billion, build yourself a nation, they could do it in absolutely record time. They would employ their own people. There would be no war. There would be no insurgency. But Bush is asking the Army to do something that should be done by a construction company. And the construction companies that he's bringing in there, he's having them, you know, basically militarized. And that's not working either, because it's our construction companies. And they're saying, hey, you know, we've got Iraqi construction companies. We built those palaces for Saddam. We built all these high-rise office buildings. We built hospitals. We built schools. We know how to build things. Why do you have to bring Bechtel and Halliburton in here? We know how to do this stuff. Oh, it has to do with helping Cheney's buddies get rich, does it? As Jack Murtha said, what the troops get disappointed about is that they don't have the equipment they need, didn't have enough troops when they went in the first place, inadequate forces to transition to peace. That's the thing that's demoralizing them. The military has accomplished its mission. It's done everything we asked them to do. Nation building is not part of the mission a military does well. As Nico says, disagreeing with the president on Iraq is not defeatism, it's patriotism. Bush starts out with his rant. I know many Americans have questions about the cost and direction of this war. But he didn't even go close to the question. But, I would agree with Fies that most Americans are saying, when is the war going to end? Back in 1999, candidate Bush, June 5th, 1999, I think it's also important for the president to lay out a timetable as to how long they'll be involved and when they will be withdrawn. Now, of course, he was speaking about Clinton and Kosovo. But, you know, there you go. His Bush tonight. If you think the terrorists would become peaceful if only America would stop provoking them, then it might make sense to leave them alone. Right. Actually, a lot of this gets to the definition of, you know, what is a terrorist? But I don't want to go too far down that road. Because, the danger here is drawing the parallel. Well, the bottom line is that in Iraq, we are fighting nationalists. We are fighting people who are saying, this is our country. We want this country. You know, this is our country. Get out of our country. It's very simple. By and large, yeah, there's some terrorists there now. There's some folks who are just, you know, let's screw up everything. There are, you know, the Wahhabists. There are the religious fundamentalists. I mean, we have unleashed all kinds of, you know, groups. But the vast majority of the people who are targeting Americans right now are people who are simply saying, get out of our country. I mean, just think for a minute. Just imagine if here in the United States, we were to hear one day that Paul Martin up in Canada has decided that George W. Bush wasn't actually elected in 2000, that the Supreme Court put him into office. And in 2004, he won by stolen votes on voting machines in Ohio, and that he's doing things that are unconstitutional, and that he's imprisoning people without benefit of constitutional protections, and he has therefore become a tyrant and a terrorist to his own people, and Canada has to invade the United States to save us from the tyrant who's running our country. Now, there are a lot of us who would agree with many of those premises. But I'll tell you, if Canada invaded the United States, if there were Canadian troops going down the streets of my city, keeping the peace, I don't think it would be very long before my fellow Americans would be shooting at them and saying, hey, you know, come on. We can take care of our own country, thank you. He might be a tyrant, but he's our tyrant anyway. Let us deal with him. We will do it in the ballot box. We will do it, or we will protest in the streets. We'll do whatever, you know, whatever we, within the law, whatever we can. But we don't need Canada invading the United States in order to, you know, it's just, or Mexico, if Mexico were to invade the United States, just how long do you think that occupation would last before Americans would turn against them? A day? A week? And then think of Iraq for that, you know, in that context. Yes, wonderful. America, you've toppled Saddam Hussein. What next? Oh, you're going to rebuild our country? Wonderful. Thank you very much. Now it's what, 3 years later? We don't still don't have electricity. We still don't have sewage. We still have, you know, a hospital's what's going on? And in the meantime, the amount of money that we have spent on the war in Iraq is enough to have paid for 11,033,658 four-year scholarships at public universities to American students. 11 million. We could have put a full four-year scholarships. We could have put 11,033,660 Americans through 4 years of college. Now, do you think that might be a better investment for the United States? Or if you look at early childhood education, we could have put 30,146,010 kids through a year of Head Start. You say, well, there's, you know, bigger issues. I mean, the whole world is hungry. In the 24 hours since this time yesterday, 54,000 people have died of hunger. We could have fed everybody on Earth for 9 years. That is all the hungry, you know, all the people who are not being fed right now. We could have fully funded global anti-hunger efforts a full 9 years with the money that we've spent so far in Iraq. This is a mind-boggling amount of money for a war that we were told was going to pay for itself. By the way, costofwar.com, great source for this information. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 866-440-8466. Our telephone number, we'll be back.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, wasty skunk. Your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch.
Mr. Grinch, the Mr. Bush.
The best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stump.
Welcome back, my friends. Thank you very much. Is that James Earl Jones singing that? It's incredible. Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio program. Amazing stuff going on out there in the world. I just have to tell you, it's just absolutely amazing. The spin that the Bush administration is putting on this whole thing. And the Today Show. The Today Show this morning with Katie Couric, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. This is over on Daily Kos if you want to get the details. She asked Attorney General Gonzalez, she says, what's the authority that he has to conduct warrantless spying on Americans? And Gonzalez says, oh, he has the inherent authority. The inherent authority? Apparently he's referring to the September 14th, 2001 authorization for war. Having scoured the authorization, I can't find anything that would grant the president the power, writes Georgia 10 over at Daily Kos. And that's it. I mean, you know, I shared parts of it with you earlier. Actually, that was the war act that allowed him to invade Afghanistan. It says he may use appropriate force, all necessary and appropriate force. Is spying part of force? And does illegal spy? I mean, you know, it's just, whereas the president has authority under the Constitution to take action to deter and prevent acts of international terrorism against the United States, now therefore be it resolved. And it goes in all this stuff. No, I'm sorry. It doesn't. Russ Feingold this morning responds. This is just an outrageous power grab, he says. Nobody thought when we passed a resolution to invade Afghanistan and to fight the war on terror, including myself who voted for it, thought that this was an authorization to allow wiretapping against the law of the United States. There are two ways you can do this kind of wiretapping under our law. One is through the Criminal Code, Title III. The other is through the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That's it. That's the only way you can do it. You can't make up a law and deriving it from the Afghanistan resolution. The president has, I think, made up a law that was never passed, says Russell Feingold. Good on you, Russell Feingold. Well said. Now, on top of this, we have another extraordinary little bit of scratch your head. Ian Sancho, Leon County's director of elections. Remember Leon County, Florida, which I'm pretty sure is where the state capital, Tallahassee, is located. Yeah, Tallahassee, the state capital of Florida, is in Leon County. And in Leon County, after last Tuesday's test of the D-Bowl voting machine, and it was a hack test, it completely flipped an election. The election was 2-6. One side had 2 votes, the other side had 6 votes, and everybody knew it because they watched the vote go in, but the machine reported that it was 7-1. So the 2 became a 7 and the 6 became a 1. The winner became a loser, and the numbers were changed. It wasn't just flipped, it was changed with no trail whatsoever. No way to track this thing. And here's where it really gets weird. Sancho, according to Brad Friedman over at Brad Blog, Sancho now says that he believes it's possible that such a hack occurred in the 2000 presidential election. In the 2000 presidential election. Apparently somebody has known for some time that these machines are hackable and how they're hackable. Finally, by the way, the National Federation for the Blind is coming to their senses and deciding to dump the D-Bowl voting machines. The National Federation for the Blind had received $1 million donation from D-Bowl and coincidentally had been very enthusiastic about D-Bowl machines. I know we are all absolutely in favor of people who are blind or visually impaired or handicapped in any way having every measure taken to make it possible, and not just possible, easy for them to vote with security and privacy. But that doesn't necessarily mean you have to have D-Bolt machines. So the National Federation for the Blind say, no, enough of those D-Bolt already. Good on them. We're going to come back with the best of the rest of the news right after this, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So a new man in the White House with a familiar name said he had some fresh ideas, but switched now since he came from Texas to Washington.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes before the hour. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Pleased to have you back with us. It's time for our best of the rest of the news segment, where we talk to a few of the folks who are involved in sharing the news with the rest of us, principally in the blogosphere, and find out, you know, what's really going on out there, what's being discussed, what do we see coming down the road, all that sort of thing. We have with us Brad Friedman. He's the founder and operator of bradblog.org, bradblog.org. Hey, Brad, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you? It's actually bradblog.com, although I think it works too.
Thank you. Yeah, okay, we will fix that. And we have Vanessa Cerulli with us, who is the assistant editor for Common Dreams, commondreams.org. Hey, Vanessa.
Hi there, Tom. How are you?
Great to have you with us.
Good, thanks.
And that's definitely .org. I've been typing it for years. Okay. Vanessa, what in your take on this, in your kind of overview of the world and events here, is the, you know, when we... 5 years from now, look back at this particular moment in time, what will we say, gee, that was the big story, maybe even the big story people didn't realize, or maybe it was the obvious one, but that's the one that really turned history?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's different. That's a totally different question than what I think is good this week.
Okay. Well, let me ask you both then. Why don't you give me both?
All right. Well, so this week, let me start with this week then. Because, if you remember, about a month ago, last time I was on kind of a corporate kick, and DuPont was under fire by the Environmental Working Group.
Mm-hmm.
For withholding company studies that showed it was polluting drinking water, toxic PFOAs and Teflon grease-resistant
right.
products, right?
Right.
So
then they got hit with a fine.
I was just going to say last week they were hit with a $16.5 million fine, but, you know, I mean...
That's chump change.
Pardon?
That's chump change for them.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah.
I'm sorry. I should just let you say it.
That's okay. Well, it's good we share the same brain, you know. It's for a good show, right? So the biggest EPA fine ever, right, but, I mean, you're right. It's very weak, considering that it's less than half of 1% of DuPont's after-tax annual profits from the whole 20 years, you know, that this was going on, so...
Yeah.
You know, but it's not to say that there's a proper apologetic dollar amount when it comes to maiming and raping the environment.
Yeah, I thought the other thing that was amazing about the DuPont story was that DuPont has promised to clean up their act on this by 1997 or 1999. It was, like, not next week.
Right, exactly, yeah, and they made
I meant 2007 or 2005.
Right.
I'm getting my decades mixed up here now.
Well, what does that say about you, Tom? Where are you stuck?
It says that we had such a wild ice storm here in Portland last night that I ended up sleeping in a hotel next to the radio station. I was in here at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. But that's a whole other story. Anyhow. So.
Well, anyway, so, you know, that was part of what happened. But I'm kind of on a corporate kick now. And so in the shadow of the WTO meetings in Hong Kong last week, you know, I mean, the big one on the tip of my tongue is Coca-Cola, basically. In an article by Hader Rizvi of OneWorld.net, we published this on the 15th of last week, and he explores, you know, the two most notorious avenues that Coke crimes have taken. That's one in India and the other in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And in India, they've been fighting for a long time to rid themselves of Coca-Cola. They've got 27 bottling plants.
This is largely around sucking up the water problems, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the whole reason they want to get rid of them is because they've definitely been, you know, using all the natural resources of that area. And not only using the resources, but in August of this year, Coke was caught distributing cadmium and lead-laden waste sludge as free fertilizer to the tribal aborigines who live near the bottling plant in Plakantmada, yeah. So it's, you know, it's just one thing after another. And then mm-hmm. after Coke was refrained from dumping the sludge and distributing it, it was Vandana Shiva, our hero,
mm-hmm.
love her, who alleged that Coke then started injecting the waste into dry boreholes, thereby contaminating the deep water community aquifers. So
yeah. Yeah, she's like the Energizer Bunny of activism. I mean, she's just always there and speaking up and never stops.
And always smiling.
Yeah, and so to the point. I mean, she's one of those people who she says something and it is just right to the point.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, she's brilliant.
Yeah, and definitely a big voice at the WTO this past week. So.
Yeah. Okay, so those are your nominees, Vanessa.
Well, you know, that's only half the article. The other half was, of course, everything that's going on in Colombia, you know, in terms of Coca-Cola and the assassination of the union leader,
mm-hmm.
Gil, way back in 96, which sort of, you know, pushed all of this to the forefront of the problem. And, you know, Coca-Cola is really only profiting from paying basically what is paramilitary groups to you know, destroy the unions.
Yeah.
So it's a huge problem, and certainly maybe not one that, you know, in 5 years, 10 years, whatever, we'll look back as being the big one of the year. But it's one that's really, really threatening concerning the power of the WTO.
Is there proof that Coca-Cola is paying paramilitary groups to destroy unions?
I wouldn't say proof. I wouldn't go that far. Thanks for clarifying that. No, I wouldn't. You know, basically, and technically, it's Coke's bottling subcontractors that are, quote, hiring death squads to eliminate their
union. Right. So this is not even Coca-Cola corporate. These are local companies that have Coke franchises, essentially.
Well, the managers that work with the death squads actually do work for Coca-Cola.
Interesting. Or that are alleged to work with the death squads.
Alleged is a good word. Yeah.
Let's make sure Common Dreams doesn't suit
soften
either.
It, right. And this isn't my article.
yeah, but we're talking about it. Good. Well, good stories. Brad Friedman, operator and founder of bradblog.com. And, Brad, what do you see as the big story? I have a feeling I know what your story is.
Yeah, well, actually, we've got two. One of them looking forward this week. You can get some information at rawstory.com on this report that's about to be released about pre-war intelligence, a rather enormous and detailed report. And I will have hopefully more details on that later today at bradblog.com, but you can get heads up right now over at rawstory.com. That's this coming week. Last week, of course, I think what you're referring to is a rather landmark week, I believe, in the election reform fight that folks like you and myself have been on for quite a while. It was a terrible week for a little company known as Diebold. Prior to last week, at the end of late in the week of prior to last, I broke that a securities fraud litigation class action suit would be forthcoming. And then last week, boy, it was a wild ride. On Monday, the CEO of Diebold suddenly and surprisingly resigned, and folks didn't know exactly why. It was clear that he was pushed out, and then it became a little bit clearer on Tuesday when it turns out that a securities fraud class action suit was indeed, as reported, launched against these guys, Diebold, along with eight current and former top-level officials, including Wally O'Dell, the former CEO, and, in fact, the new CEO who had been named to replace him, Tom Swidarski. They are all named a number of charges, including insider trading and artificially inflating stock prices.
None of which has to do with stealing elections.
Are you sure?
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting that what would bring down the guys who are running the voting machine company that's suspected of stealing elections is, you know, the pedestrian stuff of insider trading. It's sort of like, you know, what brought down Bill Clinton was the pedestrian stuff of a sex scandal.
Sure, or tax charges bringing down Al Capone.
Yeah.
But in fact, this does have to do with manipulation of elections, because there was a lot of known flaws in their voting equipment, their voting systems, and that they had been pretty much either attempting to hide from investors or hiding the severity of these problems. And though the election systems is a very small part of Diebold, which is a very old and respected company, 150 years old or so, this election business has cost them a great deal in legal fees and fighting to keep the information from getting out to investors. And in fact, discovery on these suits could yield quite a bit of information about what they knew and what they didn't know concerning their election equipment. So we'll see what happens. Now, in the light of that securities fraud litigation on Tuesday, at the same time, down in Florida, a hack test was done in Leon County. And in fact,
which just happens to be the county where the state capital of Tallahassee is located.
That's absolutely right. And down there, they were able to flip. They had a small mock election with eight votes asking a simple yes or no question: are Diebold machines hackable? And the results should have been six folks saying no and two folks saying yes, but the hacker was able to flip that that result entirely to seven yes to one no and leave no trace behind, leaving the elections director down there to say Diebold will never be used in another election in that county again. He has asked for funding to replace the Diebold machines that they have down there. And a few days later, Volusia County, which had also been deciding whether or not to use Diebold machines, in light of that test and for other reasons, decided they as well will not be using Diebold machines. This is all very important, comes at a very critical time, because as you know, January 1, 2006 is the Help America Vote Act deadline, right. And a lot of these...
A lot coming up here, and you can read more about it at bradblog.com. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com and Vanessa Cerulea of commondreams.org. Thank you both for being with us today.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Great having you both on. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Is this the world we created? We made it on our own. Is this the world we invaded?
So long. So it sticks. In the end, is this what we're all living for? Today?
This world that we created.
And welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, 866, toll-free across the United States, 866-440-THOM. And Steve in Atlanta, Georgia on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
What's up, Tom?
Hey, Steve.
Hi, and hello, Alberto.
Okay.
Hey, I'd like to respond to a caller you had earlier, the guy that was saying that the military people just don't get the Democrat or don't hear the Democrats' plan or position on the
war. Well, I think his point was, yeah, that the military, at least the military around where he was living, are not hearing. Yeah, okay.
And didn't Senator Harkin talk on the floor about how Armed Forces Radio doesn't really put out the other view?
Yeah, I believe that Al Franken just went on Armed Forces Radio in the last couple of weeks,
yeah.
And Ed Schultz is still waiting to.
Yeah.
And, we'll see how all that stuff shakes out. But I think it goes beyond that, Steve, because I think that, the Armed Forces Radio and Television is just a small piece of it. The reality is that Democrats are speaking out all the time. And if
right.
you watch C-SPAN or read the Congressional Record or read the Washington D.C. junkie publications like The Hill, you get it that they're speaking out all the time. They're coming out with specific plans. They have specific. It doesn't get covered in the mainstream media.
That's
the only
right.
time a Democrat gets picked up by CNN, ABC, MSC, NBC, CBS, NBC or any other alphabet soup. The only time, and particularly by Fox, the only time any Democrat gets picked up by and large is if they say something stupid.
Right, and down here in Atlanta on 85, it's on the interstates it runs through, up on the north end, there's a billboard up that basically says, I think it says something like, Democrats want to cut and run, but a Marine will stay until the job's done. Hoorah.
Mm-hmm.
And it says to Senator Murtha.
Yeah.
Or Representative Murtha or something like that. And,
yeah.
I mean, first of all, there's so many things wrong with that. But another point I'd like to say to that guy is, okay, you may not understand the Democrats' message, but you know full well what the Republicans' message is, and that's okay with you?
Yeah. Well, there's the problem, too, is the Republicans' message is couched in language that unless you think about it for a moment,
right.
sounds so good. Let's fight them over here so we don't have to fight them there.
What is the job?
Yeah, exactly. Let's finish the job. Well, what is the job? Let's win the war. How do you define win?
All right, I thought we already did that.
Yeah, exactly. And so the problem I think that the average GI has, or the average the average Joe, even GI Joe or not, the average person has in America who doesn't carefully follow this stuff and doesn't listen to programs either on the right or the left, with any the talk radio, which is most Americans don't listen to talk radio as much as we all think. Here we are, we're a pretty big community. I mean, we're millions
really?
Of people who are listening to talk radio, but it's not hundreds of millions. And so, most Americans are just kind of noticing stuff as it flies by broadly and peripherally, and they really pay attention to politics for about 3 weeks before an election. And the Republicans have figured that out, and they've been playing the American people like a violin.
The rest of the time, it's who's winning The Apprentice.
Yeah.
Thanks,
there you go. Thanks, Steve. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Ron in San Diego, California. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to address post-traumatic stress disorder in returning Iraqi vets.
Oh, boy.
I have a good friend, Shad Mishad. He was a psych officer in Vietnam, and he has been working with this problem ever since Vietnam. For 30-plus years of his life, he's dedicated it to the returning veterans. And what he's seeing now, he says, is just absolutely unbelievable. He has an organization called the National Veterans Foundation. Any veteran can call up there. It's got a hotline number. I went to his 60th birthday, and this is what really showed me what he was doing. And I heard guys from Vietnam all the way to current returning soldiers point at this guy with tears in their eyes, saying that if it wasn't for this man, I'd be dead right now.
Mm-hmm.
Guys telling about stories, sucking on the barrel of a gun, ready to blow their brains out, and calling this number, and this man and the people that work with him saving his life. And we're just not addressing that. This is a ticking time bomb. We see soldiers right now on the side of the road saying, Vietnam vet and I'm homeless.
Right.
This is what we're going to be facing down the road with some of these guys.
Oh, yeah. It's actually worse than it was in Vietnam because the violence directed at soldiers in Vietnam generally killed those soldiers because they didn't have good body armor. Whereas
right.
that violence directed at soldiers in Iraq is simply maiming them, and so they're coming home, you know, still alive and physically and psychologically wounded, number one. And number two, the combat in Vietnam, by and large, didn't tend to be up close and personal. It wasn't, because it wasn't cities. Vietnam was mostly
right.
rural. It was, you know, you fire into a grove of trees, and then you find the bodies afterwards and stuff like that. And you know, hand-to-hand, what is virtually hand-to-hand combat or city combat is much more brutal, much more violent.
Well,
and
much
more in your face, excuse me.
Excuse me, that's exactly what he says. He says that it's urban warfare, it's hand-to-hand combat, and he says, And sometimes you shoot an innocent bystander, and
sure.
you have to live with that for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and that produces some of the worst post-traumatic stress disorder stuff. Yeah,
he tells a story about a 20-year-old kid that comes back, third-degree burns over his entire body. They have to keep him isolated for 6 months because of fear of infection. And he says this kid will look at him and tell him, Shad, if you care at anything about me at all, put me out of my misery. Don't
yeah.
let me live like this.
Oh, no, there's some really horrible stories. Ron, you got a website for this guy you want to plug?
Well, it's called National Veterans Foundation.
National, so you can just Google it, the National Veterans Foundation. It sounds like a great organization. And I know, I didn't mean that in a cynical way. I meant, you know, it's great what your friend is doing, and tell him that I said good on him. Ron, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and happy holidays to you. I hope you have a wonderful week here.